Good afternoon and good evening. This is the PPSAI Working Group call on the 5th of August, 2014. On the call today, we have Tatiana Kremstova, Michaela Nyland, Steve Metellus, Holly Raich, Val Sherman, Chris Pelling, Todd Williams, David Heasley, Graham Bunton, Sarah Wild, Dan Burke, Griffin Barnett, Libby Bainey, Luke Zuffer, Darcy Southwell, Justin Macy, John Blumenthal, Christian Dawson, Kathy Kleiman, Susan Kawaguchi, and Jim Bykoff. We have apologies from Alex Deacon, Carlton Samuels, Stephanie Perrin, Roy Belize, and Paul McGrady. From staff, we have Chris Long, Marika Konings, Amy Bivens, and myself, Terry Agnew. I would also like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and back over to you, Don.
Appreciate it, Terry. Fair warning, I'm going to be jumping off on mute quite often. Welcome to Michigan Allergy welcome to Michigan Allergy Season, and I just saw Chris's note here. Are other people having problems with the mic volume? Unfortunately, I'm not sure how to turn it down. I think I'll have to reposition. Okay, Chris, let me know if this is better, and other folks, if you can't hear me. Okay. At any rate, as I suggested yesterday in email, I'd like to wrap up E1 today and move on to E2. I think the discussion has been good the last couple of weeks. I'm not suggesting otherwise, but I think at times we've gotten wrapped up in details that might not, and they're useful for education on what we should be doing or not, but may distract from just moving forward with our policy recommendations as opposed to trying to come up with operational details. So with that, I'd kind of like to open up the discussion sorry about that. I told you I'd go on mute a lot. Open up the discussion on these, kind of the overarching questions that I raised. First, the obligation to notify, the obligation of a provider to notify a requester of a bounce message, you know, of a clear delivery failure, and then also try to come up with some parameters on what types of complaints or issues or requests, however we want to put it, should be forwarded and which ones shouldn't, or which ones maybe not shouldn't, but does the provider have discretion on whether to forward or not. Let me open the floor to just the affirmative notification question, because I think the E2 discussion may feed back into that second issue. Any thoughts on just in general, should there be a requirement? Steve?
Yes, this is Steve Metellus. Just to answer that question, our view is that there should be that requirement when the proxy privacy service provider knows that the relay is undeliverable. We've gotten into a lot of details about how they would know that and what form the notification would take, but all that could be left to implementation, and we would simply set up that principle that's something that the provider would be required to do.
Thanks. Any other thoughts? And maybe I should also toss out whether people have problems with the idea of pushing ahead on the core issue and not getting into details. Kathy?
Coming off mute. Can you hear me, Don? Hello, everybody.
Yeah.
I I think the flip side is that there seems to be, in some cases, a very time-consuming process involved in processing the bounce backs. And there doesn't seem to be kind of any quick automatic way to do it. And there seems to be some issue about revealing information, including IP addresses. So the question is, since we're creating baselines, not ceilings, floors, not ceilings, what's the baseline here? What would be the right amount to require, given that everybody's systems seem to be set up a little differently on this? And I don't have the answer to that, I'm afraid. Thanks.
Okay. It sounds like you're reticent to just dump it on ITN staff and walk away. Any other thoughts? A bunch. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve. I would just contest the view that this is a very complicated problem. This is a problem that providers have to deal with anyway, because in that situation, they're going to have to re-verify the email address. So they have to know, have some system for knowing when it's happening. And again, I'm not concerned with what the content of the notification, so long as it lets the requester know that is the relay attempt failed because it was undeliverable at the email address that the customer provided to the provider. So I don't think it's all that complicated, and I am prepared to leave the details on this to implementation. Thanks.
Greg. Todd?
Yeah, Todd Williams for the transcript. I was just going to echo kind of the second half of what Steve just said, which is if our concern is that the notification may reveal certain things and that we're leaking kind of into the review discussion, I think a general principle that the submitter is notified of the bounce back would address that, right? I mean, whether the content of that notification reveals anything, I think, can be left to the CP provider, but that just a simple notice of the bounce back shouldn't necessarily get into that. Thanks.
Okay. Appreciate that. Graham?
Thanks. This is Graham Bunton for the transcript. It sounds to me like everybody's sort of on board that if we go down the route that the requester is entitled to a notification that their message was not deliverable, then what they are returned is a message that merely states that their message was undeliverable and probably nothing more. So it's not a return of a bounce. It's just simply that statement. That said, I'm still not sure I'm convinced that the way this process works entitles a requester to know if that bounce happened. In my mind, and I think this is what James was elaborating on previously and kind of where we're stuck at, is that the requester, when they send that message, is not communicating with the registrant. They're communicating with the privacy and proxy service. If that piece of the message bounces, then that's an issue for compliance. It's then up to the privacy and proxy service provider to communicate with the registrant, and that's our own communications with the registrant. If that communication does fail, we need to kick off a verification procedure. But I guess I still remain somewhat unconvinced that our communications with our registrant or, name holder, that a requester has any right to that information. Thanks.
I appreciate that. Never mind. Darcy? Darcy, you on mute? Darcy, can you? Oh, there, I see you typing. Yes. I was starting to think that. Well, Okay. Great. Well, I'll look for your hand up. It sounds to me as if we've got... Steve?
Yeah, I just wanted to respond to Graham. I mean, I don't know where you get the idea that we're trying to communicate with the provider. We're not. We're trying to communicate to your customer. You're running a business which you have a responsibility to provide a channel for these matters to be relayed. That's the reason why we're trying to come up with what the standards are. And if that doesn't work, if you're unable to do that, I think we're entitled to know that so that we can take other means to try to solve the problem. So I'm just mystified by the idea that somehow we're trying to communicate with the provider. We're not.
Susan?
Hi. I just want to sort of add on to what Steve just said. You know, I do, we do enforcement all the time against domain name registrations that are infringing, and I think our first line, our first step is to actually try to get a hold of that registrant and say, do you understand that you've registered a domain name with Facebook and this could possibly be an infringing use? And you should think about this now instead of a year down the road or even 2 months down the road once they've invested some time and money into the site. And, you know, there's a lot of people that unfortunately do not get, you know, any sort of advice before they tried to launch a business. If they chose a different domain name, we'd have no problem with the content. But close to somewhere between 25% to a third of all those registrations are proxy registrations. So it seems to me that the proxy company would prefer to have me go straight to their client, customer, and iron all of that out without utilizing the services of the proxy company. So I just do not understand why relaying the message and therefore getting some information about if that message went through or not wouldn't be important to the proxy company, too. Do you want to deal with all of the... all of the communications that go back and forth in just, you know, sort of educating that new registrant and getting someone to comply, you know, with or to not infringe upon a trademark. I just don't understand why a proxy is any different than a regular domain name registration in that you should be able to contact whomever is in control of that domain. And, you know, I'm not talking response. I'm not obligating a response. I'm just saying we should be able to know that email address would relay whatever communication we send. It makes no sense.
Okay. Michaeli?
Thanks, Don. Michaeli, for the transcript thingy. So we've been talking a lot about this for the last couple of weeks, and my poor little head is beginning to hurt. At this juncture, we're talking about what exactly? Are we talking about somebody using an email address that appears in public who is and sending something to that, or are we talking about somebody interacting with the provider via some kind of online form or whatever to submit something which they hope will get through to a licensee or submitting a complaint? So this is where I'm getting a little bit confused about the... It's all this thing to do with handling of the bounces and everything else that seems to be causing me a certain degree of kind of headache and everything else. I'm not 100% sure exactly what we're talking about. So if somebody could please clarify that for me, it would help. Thanks.
Well, when I keyed the question up, my view is that since we're talking about privacy proxy, where we are talking about the obligation of a provider to notify a requester that there's been a delivery failure.
But hold on. This is where the headache is coming from, Dom, because there's a difference. Okay, if, for example, how do I phrase this? Because you're talking about the obligation of the privacy proxy provider to do something, then it suggests that the privacy proxy provider is more involved in that process than might be the case. Because to my mind, if you're talking about what the proxy privacy provider is meant to be doing about informing X and informing Y and informing Z in relation to everything else, then that sounds like something which is very interactive between whoever wants to interact with the domain, the user of the domain name, rather than somebody simply sending an email. I see Steve's got his hand up. Maybe he can clarify this for me. Thanks.
Okay, I was, but I'll defer to Steve. I hadn't seen his hand.
No, Don, go ahead.
I guess now I'm confused by Michaela's confusion. To me, it's what we're talking about is much more straightforward. The provider gets a request. The provider forwards the relay, the request to relay. The provider forwards the relay. The relay message bounces. What's the obligation of the provider to notify the requester that there's been a bounce? To me, it's that straightforward. There's nothing involving, there's nothing involving any direct communications between the requester and the beneficial registrant.
Yeah, but Don, how would I, as a provider, know that there's been a bounce? You know, if the communication is directly between. I'll pick on Steve because he's big enough to take it. So let's say Steve wants to contact you, and you've got a domain name registered via, I'll pick on Two Cows, they're big enough as well, via Two Cows, but using some kind of privacy service. So he's not going to Two Cows, he's going to do a Whois lookup, and he's getting an email address from Whois, he's sending an email to them. Now, if there's a bounce, who's getting the bounce message? Why would I, as the provider in this scenario, be even aware of the bounce? Because I'm not the one who sent the email, so why would I get the bounce?
Well,
that's not how email works.
Yes,
sorry?
It is. You're the one. Yes, it is. You're the one who is forwarding a relay request.
No, I'm not forwarding a relay request.
You're the provider. Theoretically,
yeah, but this is the thing. If you're sending an email to an email address, then technically speaking, all that is happening is that email is flowing through my system somewhere else.
No.
Yes.
No.
Yes.
I'm okay. And now let me finish the statement before jumping in, please. And after this, I'll defer to Steve.
Okay.
I'm the requester. I send you an email saying, please relay this to...
No, you don't. You send an email. You send an email to the email in Whois. You're not coming near me.
If you're a proxy provider, it's your email that's in Whois.
It's an email which is in Whois. It might not be my email. But you're not going near me. You're sending an email to an email address.
No, all I can say... All right, let me... Maybe. Okay, every proxy registration I've seen has an email affiliated with the proxy provider. Maybe my experience is too limited. Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve. So, Michele, maybe this will help, but if not, just take two aspirin and hopefully that will relieve your head. I'm looking at the E1 template, and I see that different providers are doing this in different ways. One in One Internet says, messages received at the email address posted in the Public Whois database for your private domain name will be forwarded to the email address associated with your account name or to another email address in accordance with the preferences you set. So that's a situation in which it says will be forwarded to the email address. That means will be forwarded by the provider to the email address. Now, if that were to bounce back, that were to be undeliverable, the provider would know, but the requester, the one who originally generated the message, would not know. That's the scenario that we are talking about. The same thing is true with domains by proxy. When you purchase a private domain registration, DBP creates a private email address for that domain name at domainsbyproxy.com. Thereafter, when messages are sent to that private email address, DBP handles them according to the email preferences. So it goes on about forwarding. And we're going to talk in a few minutes about what the requirement is to forward it. Now, there are other services that generate a random email address that the requester can use, and in those cases, the requester would know if it had bounced back because they would send it to random at the domain name service. You know, this is something that changes every 14 days or whatever. Then they would know. So this, what we're talking about here, wouldn't come into play. But many of these services don't work that way. Who is Privacy Service, affiliated with Above.com. Messages received at the email address posted in the Public Who Is database will be forwarded to the domain contact email address provided in your account. This forwarding is not filtered in any way. So, again, that's a situation where the provider knows, the requester doesn't know. All we're saying is that when that occurs, the requester should be advised. Thank you.
Darcy, you're back on? Hopefully on?
I think I am this time.
Okay.
Darcy Southwall. I guess kind of back to what Kathy said in the very beginning and also sort of what Graham said, I guess we're talking about minimum standards, and there seems to be an assumption that the bounce, it's a permanent bounce, and it's like, okay, let's say that we do get a bounce back. I would argue that the privacy proxy providers have an obligation to investigate and treat that sort of, you know, treat that failure as a reason to try to get correct information for their end user, for the registrant, and get it corrected, as opposed to simply notifying the requester. It seems like it's almost a TOS violation by the end user not to give the provider the right information so that things can be forwarded as they're supposed to be. Thanks.
You're absolutely correct, and that has come up before. I think right now we're just focusing on the obligation to notify at all because there's been some disagreement on that. The obligation of the provider to try to remedy the issue is still going to be there. And, you know, part of all of this is, okay, when, this may be too much into the operational details, when should the notice of the bounce go? Should it go immediately, if there is one? Should it wait until there are attempts to remedy? But to me, that's kind of been, will fall in someplace different from the basic question here. Is that helpful?
Yes, thanks.
Okay. I'm looking at the chat, and I think we really should move on to E2. We've got the basic areas of agreement or disagreement. I will note that I don't think we can require anything that any more than, you know, if there's no underlying issue, I think here has been that bounces that the provider is aware of would have to be forwarded, if anything, because I don't see where it's practical to require notification of a bounce if the provider never knows about it. Mary?
Hi, Don, and hi, everybody. Thanks. Maybe your last sentence just clarified what I was going to ask, which was the second question you wanted to discuss today, whether the we're not talking about notification, but just the initial forwarding, whether it's to forward all requests, some requests, or at the discretion of the provider. And in the preliminary conclusion that we've compiled so far, you know, it's worded somewhat differently. So even if there's no time on this call to discuss that, it would be helpful for working group members to indicate, you know, where their support lies for the forward part of the relay request.
That will be next. I do want to touch that. Obviously, we're not going to make 10:30 to cover both topics. Kathy?
Thanks, Don. I don't want to keep us from moving forward, but I think I was going to highlight the same point Mary just mentioned, that we don't yet have agreement, I don't think we have convergence on what exactly should be relayed. I think there's agreement that certain types of abuse cases, and we have some good language on that, should be relayed, but not necessarily agreement that every request should be relayed. And I'm wondering what kind of implication that has for the question we were just asking, which is bounce backs and notification if something goes through. If we forward everything, does it make it much harder to handle? And maybe this is something we deal with under question two. Does it make it much harder to track the responses versus if we kind of narrow down what must be relayed and then require a little more effort on those? So I just thought I'd throw the question out there because I'm thinking about it. Thanks.
Steve?
Yeah, this is Steve. I think Kathy's comment is a good segue to the next question.
Yep.
I think there, which is, you know, what's the scope of the obligation to relay? So I think there are really two ways to approach this that we've heard over the past couple of weeks. One is what Kathy referred to as an abuse case approach, where you have a list of types of complaints or types of messages that have to be relayed. That's one approach. So it's kind of additive, is case one and case two and case three and so forth. The other is more general, and it says you should relay everything, but you can use commercially reasonable means to filter out spam and this type of thing, use of communications. I think they might arrive at about the same place, but in other words, it's saying there's a general rule you forward everything, but you can have commercially reasonable measures to filter out things, as opposed to saying here's a list of things you have to forward. The difference, it seems to me, is that in the approach Kathy is advocating, it's required that each provider look at each message and decide whether it falls in one of those categories or not. Is it a message about abuse type 1 or abuse type 2, abuse type 3, or is it not? The other approach actually reflects a level of trust in the providers to say, we know that some providers use filters. Not all do. I just read one that didn't under current practices. But as long as those filters are commercially reasonable and they're directed to weeding out spam, not to weeding out complaints of abuse, then we're comfortable with them doing that. They don't have to look at every single one. They can use some type of automated method to decide what is not forward. I think those are the two different approaches. They could end up at about the same place. I think one of them puts a lot more burden on the provider. That's Kathy's approach. And the other gives a lot more flexibility to the provider. That's the one we're recommending.
Thanks. I noticed that James is not on the call. He was one of the, may have been the first person to suggest that there, that not everything should be, not every relay request should be forwarded. So I specifically want to, well, continue the discussion, but with that in mind, to see if we can tease that argument out a bit as to why there should be a limit, or conversely, statements on why there really shouldn't be, and this is getting us wrapped up in, getting us or potentially a provider wrapped up in too much detail. Ali?
Can I summarize where I think we are? Because I don't think I need aspirin for it. I think we are, if the privacy proxy that is between the requester and the beneficial registrant, actually the message goes through their systems and is forwarded, then it will be the privacy proxy provider that gets the bounce, and that's what should be told to the requester. If it doesn't go through, if the message does not go through a privacy proxy but goes through another address that is provided, and the privacy proxy provider is not the where the bounce back message goes, then we are saying, well, then they do not pass on that message. So it boils down to what somebody said earlier, I think, and that is what is passed on is what the registrar or this privacy proxy service actually provides, and that's all that's passed on. And if they're not in receipt of it, then they obviously can't pass it on. Now, is that what we have agreement on?
I think I said something similar to it in trying to wrap up.
I can't swear
we've got agreement on it. Pardon? I mean, I would agree with that statement.
Good. Thank you.
Steve, it's David Hughes. I have a question.
David, go ahead. It's Don.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So the question I had was, if there's a minimum, going back to what kind of messages need to be relayed, if there was a standard that said any abuse-related messages have to be forwarded, then it would still be the privacy proxies at their discretion. They could take the policy like the one that Steve just read that said we forward everything, or perhaps for an additional fee to the end beneficiary, they filter everything other than abuse messages. Wouldn't that be at their discretion then?
It would be at their discretion depending on what guidelines the group comes up with.
Right. So I'm saying that the specifics of the guidelines aside, if the guidelines were something along the lines of if it's abuse-related, you must forward it. If not, it's at your discretion. If filtering out everything that's not abuse-related is too onerous, they can take the position that the other company took, which is we'll forward everything.
Right. I guess the issue before us now is whether we want to provide the latitude to limit what's forwarded or just say that things other than abuse also should go through. Steve?
Is anybody making that argument that anything other than abuse should be mandatorily relayed? Anybody on this call taking that position?
Yes.
Yes, this is Steve. I think we've in fact agreed that. with regard to the transfer issues. There's some notifications that have to go to.
Okay. So my term of abuse, and I was trying to use shorthand, but abuse and RAS and registration, I mean, there would be a list of things that would only make sense to forward. And then we had the discussion previously about how many requests for transfer and so on, and I get that that's a detail to be dealt with later, I guess. But I suppose I mean non-spam messages, if we can agree on what that is.
Right. And that's part, I think, of the discussion. How feasible is it going to be for any provider? Feasible, time-consuming, whatever, to make the distinctions. And, you know, that's obviously an internal question, but still, how much should we even want to provide the discretion? Or should everything be forwarded that the proxy privacy provider receives? Steve, you...
Yeah, this is Steve. I think David's comment kind of illustrates what the divergence is. If we could generate a list of things that the provider has to forward, it would have abuse, it would have transfer, it would have some of the other things we've talked about, we could go that way as long as all those abuse cases are in there. The question that I'd like to hear the providers speak to is whether they would prefer to do that and therefore have to, as I would understand, have to categorize everything that comes in, or whether they'd prefer to have a default that it's forwarded but subject to, you know, commercially reasonable anti-spam and anti-abuse measures. As long as those don't capture the abuse cases, then perhaps that's easier. But I guess I would defer to the – I'd like to hear what the providers have to say about that.
Again, James is not on the call. Graham, McKaylee? I guess the question is there any reason not to say that everything should be, if there's a request for relay, is there any reason to say that some should not be relayed? Kathy?
Yeah, I don't see how that meets the minimum baseline requirements. I guess I'm confused because we spent, as I've been saying in the chat, we spent such a long time talking about abuse. And I thought it was, maybe I'm wrong, part of this category, Category E, question one. And so I guess I thought we were coming up with that definition of abuse because we were creating categories of messages that must be forwarded. Of course, if it's simpler and easier to create, to forward everything subject to, you know, certain filters, great. But what's the minimum baseline? And I thought we spent a lot of time talking about categories of what must be forwarded and why they must be forwarded and why, you know, what the relay means, and I guess I don't quite understand why we'd be kind of jettisoning all of that right now, rather than keeping it as an option. You can do A or B. You can forward more selectively or you can forward more broadly, but make your policies known, publish this, get it out there. But if you have, and I don't want to speak for James, but my sense is, and I could be wrong, somebody correct me if I'm wrong, if I've chosen the option in domains by proxy that says I'm not interested in domain name solicitations, I don't want sales, you know, if somebody wants to buy my domain name, I'm not interested in that email, can't I do that? Provided I get the abuse notices, provided I get the RAA required type notices, aren't there things I can opt out of because I'm not interested in them? Just a thought. Thanks.
Well, that's a good point. Do we want to be infringing on opt-out opt-out choices that the proxy or privacy providers might be offering. Susan?
So specifically to Kathy's question, you know, currently, I mean, I have a domains by proxy account, and currently you can select nothing is forwarded, filter for spam, or forward everything. So, I'm not sure. Is there a provider out there that would actually say, oh, I'm not going to send anything that looks like a solicitation to buy the domain name. I'm not going to send anything where people's complaining about the domain, the website's content. I'm not going to send, you know, if you go down the line, I don't even know how they do that, but I'm not that person that has to worry about that. But, that's, at least with domains by proxy, that is not an option right now. So I'm not sure why we would want to put that in as an option and a requirement for the proxies to have to consider providing.
I'm sorry, I didn't quite follow. What isn't an option?
An option to depending on the content or the subject of the message, to forward it or not. I mean, it's either nothing's forwarded, it's filtered for spam, or you receive everything, including spam. Those are GoDaddy's options. I'm looking at my account right now. So, you know, Kathy's point that she doesn't want to receive any emails that are asking about selling the domain name. I don't know if I have not done a survey of all the proxy services, but I would doubt that sort of granularity is available right now.
Okay. I appreciate the clarification there. Michele?
Just responding to Susan. Good afternoon, Susan, or good morning. I think the thing here is if somebody in the future wanted to offer that service, and maybe somebody does offer it already, I don't actually know, we shouldn't end up with a policy that preclude them from doing that. I mean, ultimately, from your perspective, you want to make sure that your genuine abuse complaint type things get through. If a service provider blocks solicitations or other types of I don't know, annoying emails, well, you know, no harm, no foul, really. So I think it's just to allow the flexibility more than anything else, if I've understood what we're talking about. Thanks.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, Chris, for the record, or the transcript, sorry. Yes, going on what should or shouldn't be relayed, at the end of the day, it's not for us to decide what should or shouldn't. It's up to the person who's receiving those emails or wants those emails to decide, because that's nothing to do with us. Now, what we do, and I mentioned in the chat session there, is we don't block anything, we forward everything on, but for the person who's sending the mail to the person that needs to receive it, registrant contact, billing or technical, whatever it might be, you have to go through two more hoops. It's not just a simple case of fire off an email and hope it gets there. As an example, with our system, and not everyone does this, granted, but it's something to think about. Not all mail systems are the same. Not all email systems will give a bounce. You can argue the toss until you're blue in the face that every email system out there should be the same. They're not. You can't guarantee getting a reply. Now, other things preclude receiving emails, for instance, spam filters and everything else, and you can never guarantee getting through those spam filters because they're not controlled by the person sending or potentially sometimes the person receiving those emails. As with us and the Privacy Protection Service, you would send an email to a blank contact at domain. We then reply with a set of instructions, so it has to be read by a human being. If you wish to try and do it automatically, it can't be done. And that will stop a lot of the problems out there, i.e. people receiving spam, because spam bots will just fire off a load of emails and hope for the best. In some senses, it's not for us, the working group, to decide who should receive and who should not receive the information we send. The working group decides how, in our sense of doing this, what should get through, in a sense of abuse complaints, for an example. I'm not saying we should only allow abuse complaints, because at the end of the day, that would be too tiresome on the Privacy Protection Service. But at the very outset, the guys that want to send out, for instance, DMC, that's our accountants, DMCA notices, etc., do want it to get through, and that will normally be a person with a very long document sending an email to a particular party, and that obviously is the one document that needs to get through. That's about it. Just a point, really, that mail servers are all different. You can't guarantee to get a bounce or response, but what we need to provide is the facility to get the mail through.
Let me just jump in quickly. I thought somebody else had a hand up. Well, I think we understand that, and that's why we talked about some kind of obligation only if the provider is aware of the bounce. But I want to raise something that you focused on and that kind of is implicit in what Susan just said. It's sounding like there are providers out there who give the option of nothing, that nothing is forwarded. Now, under our charter, and again, what's been discussed and was going to be discussed very in detail in E2, under our charter, do we need language that says you don't have that option? You must relay abuse complaints.
Again, I think that's down to the receiver of the email and the Privacy Protection Service. An argument that was made before was with regards, should the sender be notified that the emails either got through or bounced? Well,
I'm not talking about bounce messages here. I'm talking about obligations to forward the relay. And what conditions do we have to establish where there is no choice? The messages must be forwarded.
Then surely that would be a modification to the RIA and nothing to do with the working group, because you're enforcing there something that has to be done in who is.
Well, I'm going to open this up. I don't agree with that statement, but now that somebody else has a hand up, Susan?
I don't understand how a domain registration could not receive email. I think that, maybe not specifically violates the RIA, but violates the spirit of the RIA at the least. I'm not sure this is addressed in the RIA, but if you are a domain registrant, you have a responsibility to have a working admin email address. You know, you can't, if you do not, you cannot renew it, you cannot, transfer it, you can't do a lot of mechanics with the domain name registration. And you have a responsibility to consumers out there to receive emails. So I don't know why we would ever agree to, and I've never understood why proxy services have gotten away with this, that the ultimate registrant, the licensee, whatever you want to call them, the client of the proxy service provider, can receive no communications. And I would assume in that case that the proxy provider is not reading those either. So, to me, that's just sort of the line in the sand. There has to be a certain amount of emails received by that licensee. I mean, absolutely could not agree with allowing what is going on now and no emails being forwarded at all. Now, how we get to the point of what is forwarded, is flexible on.
agree, and I think that is the question that we have to focus on here. What bounces aren't part of this. There haven't been requirements before, and PNSO has now told us we need to come up with requirements.
Right.
And I think we have to operate on that basis. Michele?
Hi, thanks, Tom. See now, Susan, this is where we come, where you and I will disagree to a certain point. If I'm not trading or doing any commerce or doing anything that generates any real revenue from some service or website or whatever hanging off a domain name, then I'm not really under any obligation to publicly publish in Whois an email address for me as a registrant. And if you look up michele.cat, do a Whois lookup on it, you won't find my email address. It's not there. Because the .cat Whois is compliant with Spanish and European data privacy. Now, does that mean that if I was doing something untoward with the domain name, that nobody would be able to reach me? No, of course not, because there are other methods of doing that. Also, as well, of course, the registrar is contactable. Now, in the case of proxy privacy, and the thing is that the proxy privacy provider is going to be reachable, and the registrar is going to be reachable in cases of serious abuse. So I think there's a difference here. But I think Susan and I have discussed this for many months, so I think she's well aware of my difference of opinion on all of this. Thanks.
If I can just jump in there and respond, but if we limit this discussion to GTLDs, what ICANN does control, then I do think there is a responsibility for the RAA.
No, have a look at the whoisper.cast, Susan. Have a look at the whoisper.cast.
I'd really like to stay on focus. We're not talking about... And I don't know where I'm going wrong. I think we have a very focused discussion here. It doesn't have to do with direct communications or anything else. But the issue before us is, should this working group set up mandatory requirements for forwarding? And if so, what are they?
I think you have some hands up in green there.
Yeah, you've got three people.
Don, are you with us?
Don there?
Well, maybe can we just go ahead, Volker? Do you want to?
Yeah, Volker, go ahead.
Volker, are you there? Something's happened to the audio.
Yeah.
I can hear you fine.
I can hear you fine.
Me too.
Okay, whoever, if Volker can't talk, whoever's next in the line, just go ahead then.
Okay, that's me. It's Kathy. Volker, whenever you come back in, let me know, and we'll jump to you. So I agree with what Steve said in the commentary, that at one point in this discussion we did agree that kind of the option of opting out completely from email is probably not something we're going to support. We will support some type of mandatory minimum requirements. As you know, I always thought that followed pretty closely from where the questions are. So mandatory legal requirements about allegations of illegal activity. And I thought that by consensus we had expanded that to include RAA-type notices, like renewals and other kinds of concerns, obviously updating email addresses, what verification and validation-type emails. So I thought that's where we were, and I thought what we're talking about here is going above and beyond that. So just adding my 2 cents. Thanks.
Steve, you're next, and Volker says he can wait.
Volker can wait. All right, I'll go ahead. I'm just answering Don's question, which is, what should be the policy? We put forward a proposal about 10 days ago. I'm glad to recirculate it. It's basically I'll relay everything, but subject to commercially reasonable filtering. I'm happy to consider an additive approach if someone can provide a list of the types of complaints that they feel should be forwarded, again, as a mandatory matter. We're glad to take a look at that. And obviously some providers on this call have said they would prefer that approach. Others we haven't heard from, so maybe they wouldn't. But let's get the two options out on the table and try to figure out which is the best way to go. As I said, they may end up, practically speaking, in approximately the same place. But let's get them both out there, and then let's try to decide. Thank you.
Well, given that we don't have Don and we've got less than a minute, maybe we can do it all by email.
Yeah, well, we may have to. Volker, did you want to have the last word?
He can't either.
Yes, I guess he can. Okay. All right. Well, we are approaching the top of the hour here.
Yeah, we're at the top of the hour, so it's...
Okay, well, Mary, did you...
Yeah, I was going to follow up on your suggestion and what you and Holly are saying, that since we're 1 minute off and it seems like we're not getting agreement on this, that maybe we could take it to the list. And what staff can do is try and summarize the gist of where things seem to be today and see if we can get some discussion and possibly agreement, with the hope that for next week we can fully focus on anything else to do with E2. Would that work?
Yep. That's
let's try
fine.
To do that.
Okay.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good afternoon. Bye.
Thanks, all. Bye-bye.
Thanks, all.
Thank you. Once again, that does conclude the conference for today. Please disconnect all remaining lines at this time, and thank you very much for joining. Andre, if you can stop the recordings.